Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the Cembra Money Bank Half Year Results 2015 Investors Conference Call and Live Webcast. I'm Selena, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Robert Oudmayer, CEO, and Mr. Antoine Boublil, CFO of Cembra Money Bank. Please go ahead, gentlemen.
Thank you, Selena. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the presentation of our half-year results 2015. I'm here together with Antoine Boublil, our CFO, and also Volker Glowy, our Chief Risk Officer, is present here at the call. Before we get into details, let me summarize the highlights of the first half-year in 2015. Looking at the environment, the 15th of January, the day where the Swiss National Bank announced the US-Swiss French DPEC, had quite some impact on the Swiss market and also, in a way, quite some impact on us, although less than on the market. Interest rate turned negative, which helped the funding, but at the same time we get charged for the cash we hold with the SNB. The weaker euro also had a significant impact on the car market in Switzerland, and I will talk a little bit more in the next pages on this one. The Swiss economy contracted in Q1 and also for the first half year, 2015, economists do not expect growth. The positive news for us is that the consumer spending held up pretty well. In this challenging environment, we showed excellent net income growth, 8% to 69.6 million Swiss francs. Earnings per share were up 10% to 2.37 francs. We managed to grow financing receivables by 1% to 4.1 billion Swiss francs, and we were able to outperform Swiss GDP growth. It was again our cards business that supported growth strongly. We kept tight control of costs, which is reflected in a solid cost-income ratio of 42.8% in the first half, down from 44.5% last year. We delivered on all our medium-term financial goals, including ROE, which was 17.7%, clearly above the 15% target. Operationally, we made significant progress in the first 6 months of 2015. We saw strong inflows from retail and institutional deposits, which allowed us to repay in July the remaining IPO bank loan and a part of the GE loan. Our IT transition is well on track, with more than 80% of all TSA items completed, and we expect completion of this major project until year-end 2015. A prudent risk management approach is reflected in the stable risk metrics, NPL of 50 basis points and a loss rate of 1% as guided in February. Also in February, we announced that we would like to buy back shares in case of a liquidity event. We also executed on this. In May, we bought back 1.8 million Cembra shares for a total consideration of 100 million from GE. With this, we have reduced our excess capital while maintaining a very solid capital base with a Tier 1 ratio of 18.7%. So let's give you some more detail on the product lines. If you look at the market for personal loans first, the market was slightly down again in the first half 2015. We don't have the exact figures, but we think that the market has been in line with previous year. So it's a tough market. You know, we have been holding market share and also price in this very competitive market. If you look at our receivables and you look at the market, we have been holding very, very well there. I think it's a good result. Something else what we did was when we moved from GE Money Bank to Cembra Money Bank, we lost a lot of our top of mind awareness. So what we have done is we have launched a new brand ambassador, Christa Rigozzi, who is a very successful presenter and entertainer. And we had a nationwide campaign in Switzerland in the first couple of months of 2015. To increase, first of all, our top of mind, but also now to advertise our brand very well. We got a lot of positive feedback on this campaign, and we are very proud and happy that we have Christa for the remaining of the year as our brand ambassador at least. The aggressive advertising, the ban, we talk about it in the next page a bit more, will help us as well. We are never aggressive in advertising in Cembra. We have some of our colleagues, competitors who are bit more aggressive than we are, and I think the ban on aggressive advertising will support our midterm strategy. We move to auto. The revaluation of the Swiss franc had a significant impact on the Swiss auto market. because prices of the importers' cars fell by about 10%. Massive car sales, new car sales in the first 4 months of the year. New car registrations in the first 6 months increased by 8%. So most of the sales has been done the first 4 months, and then the delivery is a bit later. Sometimes very aggressive rates in the market because captives, you know, they really want to sell their existing stock, so they were quite aggressive. And a used car market under pressure because people massively moved to new car market, so a difficult used car market in the first half. So turbulent first 6 months. We benefited less than the captives from this growth because we have a long-term strategy here, which is not a price strategy. So we kept our prices quite stable. We have been holding our market position. Our focus is on service and our profitability versus growth at low prices, and we kept our strategy there. So we benefited less in this market. We think that the market will stabilize and normalize in the second half. We think that the used car market will pick up again because a lot of cars have been traded in the first 6 months. And we think that our long-term strategy is the right one, service versus just price. So we are pretty positive still about our auto market. Look at credit cards. Credit cards continue the growth path. Compared to the first half of 2014, we had 8% growth in the number of credit cards, 11% growth in assets, and even 26% growth in commission and fee income. So very positive trends in my view. Another positive trend is the usage in NFC. You know that up to 40 francs you can use your card without using the code, the PIN. We had 22% of all NFC transactions in the first half of 15, and we see really, you know, a sharp increase in the usage of NFC, and we're benefiting from this. So also revolve rates were a bit up, so we had also asset up 11%. And again, no, we're pretty proud that the Cumulus MasterCard was rated best in class in several peer analyses, which is very important for our partner Migros. So a good story and a good growth in credit cards. Just on the regulatory update, the interchange had a first drop in the 1st of August from 95 basis points to 70 basis points. This does not apply to in-store microtransactions. It also doesn't apply to international transactions. And as we said before, and now we don't think it has a significant impact on our financials. We still have a very strong growth path. We also think that it might make our card more competitive, as some of our competitors might want to need to increase the annual fees. We don't have any annual fee on the micro cards. So we don't see this impact as significant on our P&L. Still a big discussion on the new interest rate cap. The consultation period ended in March 2015. Everybody basically expected a decision in April. However, the Federal Council, on basis of all the impact they got, ordered an independent study on the economic impact. The study has been expected in October, so, and then we'll see what will be the outcome. There's a lot of discussions. There were some motions in Parliament to leave the rate cap unchanged. So it's very difficult to say what's going to happen. Personally, I don't think that the potential implementation date, the 1st of January, is still feasible. Let's see when we get the decision, if it's really going to be in October. Let's see if there's any change on the interest rate. Let's see if there's change, what the change is, and what the potential implementation date is there. It's difficult to say what will be the end verdict there. However, now time is normally working in our advantage here. Another thing what's going to happen is the cool-off period. So it's going to be extended from 7 days to 14 days. It will have no real impact on our business because it just, you know, you pay out 1 week later in one time, and it won't have any impact on our business. And again, the aggressive advertising, the self-regulation, starts normally in January 2016. That will probably regulate the market more. You will also see less aggressive advertising in the market, which probably helps us on the medium term. A few words on the GE business transition. They're quite positive here. We have a 2-year IT separation plan from GE. It's expected to close in Q4 2015, so exactly 2 years after the IPO, so we're on track. It's hard work for everybody. It's a huge project, but we're pretty well on track to close the whole program in the fourth quarter of this year. We have now more than 80% of all the TSAs completed, and we're planning to complete everything before the end of the year. It will give it a not a new IT landscape, but an upgrade and a renewing of our IT landscape, so we will have better technology, and it will also simplify our world outside GE. Just some other words on GE. So you know that GE, you know, sold the remaining of the shares. We also reduced GE funding, and I know, I think we are well positioned for growth in 2016 and beyond, with all the things we have been doing, and especially with this huge business transition that should be finalized in the fourth quarter. With that, I'd like to hand over to Antoine, who is going to talk you through the balance sheet, the funding, and then the P&L.
Good morning, everyone. I'll start with our balance sheet as of June compared to last year end. So our cash balance reached $534 million in June. We've used a portion of that cash in July to early prepay fully our IPO syndicate loan of $150 million, and we also started to prepay our GE term loan for about $200 million. We grew our receivable about 1% in June compared to year-end, with continued growth in cards, which was up 7%, while auto was flat and P-loan was slightly down. On the liability side, on funding, we've seen continued growth in our deposits, which were up 11%, with institutional up 7% and retail 21% up. Deposits constitute now 55% of our total funding. Our GE funding was reclassified as long-term debt versus due to affiliates in the past, as GE has sold its remaining stake in Chambra in May. And in July 15, as I mentioned before, we had a subsequent event with the full repayment of both $150 million of IPO syndicated loan and $200 million of GE funding. Our equity was $736 million, down $106 million compared to year-end, impacted by both the $93 million dividends that we paid in May and the share buyback of $100 million we executed the same month. That was partially offset by $15.5 million of tax goodwill nominal benefit that we recognized in connection with the GE transaction, and also the $69.6 million of first-half earnings that we recognized in retained earnings. If I move to the next page, we had another semester of great progress on funding. I mean, our standalone funding was 87% at the end of June, and even, you know, crossed the 90% in July post the repayment of $200 million of GE funding. Our overall cost of funding was for the first time below 1% at 97 basis points. That was the 10 basis point improvement versus December. We've seen remarkable growth on retail deposits. We're up $130 million. In the first 6 months of the year. We continue to see retail deposit as an important source of stable funding for us in the future, and we're very pleased with the progress we're making there. On institutional, we grew $91 million, or 7%. We added, again, new counterparty, and in a while we've been able to increase terms on the book. So overall, our deposit funding rate improved by 7 basis points to 75 basis points, and deposit was 55% of our funding mix. As we look at the balance of the year 15, we'll continue to increase deposits while further continuing to optimize their cost. On bank loans, we have continued to basically reorganize our funding there and the commitment from the various counterparties that we have. And the funding there went from $550 million in December to $400 million in June and, you know, $250 million, you know, in July 2015. So let me break the movement here first. We repaid $50 million of our revolving facility with a Swiss bank. We now have $150 million term loan and $100 million revolving facility with that counterparty that we completely use as a backup line for the $100 million. The overall cost, including the backup line, is now 1.19%. Secondly, we drew another $50 million on the facility with an international bank, bringing the total drawn amount to $100 million. And the overall rates on that is about 59 basis points. And we intend to draw the last $50 million of that facility by the end of this year. And then thirdly, we prepaid the $150 million of our IPO syndicated loan in June, and then subsequently in July, we completely repaid it. You know, effectively, we paid that facility more than 1 year ahead of schedule. And lastly, in July, we signed a new revolving facility with another Swiss bank for $100 million, which we'll use as a backup line. On G funding, we basically, as a subsequent event in July, reduced that amount by $200 million on the term loan, and we also canceled $200 million of an undrawn credit line. You know, basically, those $200 million credit line are now effectively replaced by the $100 million from the Swiss bank and the $100 million from the Swiss bank we signed in July. And finally, on capital market, we issued a new ABS in March to replace our $200 million. We issued about the same amount for $200 million for 4 years instead of three, and the coupon was very positive with 23 basis points. So, I mean, overall on funding, we're tracking ahead of our plan, and we expect the cost of fund in the second half to be lower than the first half. I move on to the P&L. Our net interest income was down 1%. That was mostly driven by a $1.5 million charge in the first half on the cash that we held at the SNB. This charge is booked as a reduction of interest income. Overall, on an interest income that was partially offset by better cost of fund, which was down $700K, but that was down on, you know, on $200 million higher liabilities. So as you've seen, the cost of fund rates, you know, on the previous page, we'll keep on making progress there. We still expect the SNB charge to be around $2 million for the full year, you know, following the evolution of our cash balance, you know, over the year. And we still expect our cost of fund reduction for the year to more than offset that charge for the full year. Our commission and fee income was up 15%, driven by credit card fees, which were up 26%, while insurance and other fees were stable. On cards, we've clearly noticed the higher international spends following the movement on the Swiss franc, and also we're very pleased with the growth of NFT transactions on our portfolio, as Robert mentioned, as basically transactions on our cards represent 22% of the overall transaction in Switzerland on an NFT, so quite remarkable. So overall, revenue were up 2% year over year. Our provision for losses were flat at $20.8 million, which corresponds to a loss rate of 1% in line with our guidance. And our OPEX was down 2% year over year, driven by overall productivity and timing of our IT spend, which I'll comment later. Our net income was $69.6 million, which is up 8% compared to last year, and our EPS was up 10%. On the next page, I will comment the interest income by product. On the right side, you can see the splits. Personal loan was down 2%. At $103.7 million, that was driven by slightly lower asset base on average, which was about 2%, and the yield remained stable at around 11%. On the auto was down 2% on interest income at 42.9, with a yield of 5.1 compared to 5.2 the previous year. This is driven, again, by the low-rate environment in Switzerland. Also, we've seen following the movement on the Swiss franc and the negative rates, very aggressive rates from some of our competitors in the first half. We've managed to keep our asset flat and maintain strong discipline on pricing in that regard. On credit card, we're up 17% at 21.8, driven by the growth of the portfolio with an average asset up 13% year over year and a yield increasing to 7.5%. On the next page, our provision for losses were $20.8 million, which was down $200K versus the previous year. If we look at it, if we look at the loss rate here, it was 1%, but on an adjusted basis, it was 70 basis points. The impact on lower recoveries in the first half coming from the debt sale was estimated at $6.2 million. You know, one thing we're changing, you know, this semester is we're now reporting our credit card transaction fraud losses as part of the loss line, whereas in the past it was reported in the OPEX operating expense. This represents roughly $1.5 million in our loss line in the first half 15 figures. On delinquency, we continue to have a very strong performance with driven by collection effectiveness and strong underwriting. Our 30-plus were stable at 2% year-over-year, and our NPL ratio was flat at 0.5%. Moving on to operating expense, let me start by highlighting a change in reporting that we're doing as we complete our IT transition. We wanted to increase the transparency we provide on our spend in IT going forward, and so we've introduced a new line in the OPEX split, which is called information technology, and that line, you know, in the future will encompass all our spend on IT, excluding the cost of our people and the depreciation of our IT CapEx, which will be still on the depreciation line. So essentially, that would be our running cost on IT. You'll find on the appendix of the presentation the historical number recasted with that new view. With that said, let me provide you some comments on the respective line items. On CNB, we're 2% higher versus the previous year, driven by higher pension cost, which was about $900K for the first half. As we guided, you know, earlier this year, following the reduction we had in discount rate at the end of last year, we're going to have about $1.8 million headwind from pension this year, and $900K was the first half. Expect the same impact in the second half. But we, at the same time, on the CNB, we continue to drive strong productivity in the organization. Our TSA costs were $1.2 million in the first half, down versus the previous year, as we put more, of our IT infrastructure own service in place. Basically, we, get less charge from GE coming from that. Several example of those were our new general ledger that we implemented at the beginning of the year, our revised e-service platform at the end of last year, and HR and communication infrastructure. Professional services was down $1.5 million, driven by lower consulting fees compared to the previous year. Marketing was up due to a low base we had in first half for 2014, right after our IPO. We had a lot of spend on marketing end of December 2013. So 2014 was coming off a low base. And also, this year we've had a, strong spend and campaign in the first half of the year. Postage and stationery was down $400K. It's also interesting to note as we are growing strongly in cards, our digitization program with the introduction of new services is helping us to, save money there as customers are opting more for e-statements. On depreciation, we are up at $1.8 million for the first 6 months of the year as several of the IT projects that I described before went live. And we expect the depreciation line to continue to increase and be around $5 million for the full year 2015. On other, we are down compared to the first half of 2014. This is driven by the fact that we now report credit card transaction fraud in the loss line, whereas they were reported in other OPEX, in the past. We also had one-off in the semester in the form of a share issuance tax of $3.4 million in connection with the GE sale. We also had a one-off in the previous year with a $3 million provision that we booked in June last year. So overall, our cost income ratio was 42.8%, which is lower than last year on a reported basis. And, we continue to look at our cost base and try to optimize. Moving on to capital on the next page, we ended the year with $699 million of Tier 1 capital, which corresponds to a Tier 1 ratio of 18.7%. And that's about $27 million excess capital above our defined target of 18%. This is taking into consideration both the $100 million share buyback that we've executed in May, which we deduct from our Tier 1 capital, and also the positive impact of $15.5 million we had on the nominal tax benefit associated with the sale of the GE shares. We also have assumed in that Tier 1 determination a dividend payout of 70%, which basically is a placeholder for now and will be revised or revisited at year-end as we conclude the year. We'll continue to look at, different potential use of our excess capital, and it's about the same framework that we've discussed in the past, but we'll look at this in the context of not materially diverging from the predefined target we have on the Tier 1 ratio. On the right-hand side, you can see, our EPS was up 10%, as our weighted average number of shares at the end of June, reduced compared to the previous year following the buyback. We expect the weighted average number of shares outstanding to be around 28.8 million for the full year 2015. So now let me turn it back to Robert to conclude.
Yeah, thank you, Antoine. So at the time of the IPO, we gave 4 million term targets. One, asset growth in line with Swiss GDP. Two, ROE of at least 15%. Three, Tier 1 ratio of minimum 18%. And four, a dividend payout of 60 to 70% of net income. In the first half of 2015, we delivered on all these targets. Looking into the second half of 2015, our priorities will be on, one, further optimizing the funding and successfully completing the IT transition, which is important and well on track. Two, prepare and adapt to the different changes in the regulatory environment. And thirdly, optimizing our cost base by further driving digitization and simplifying our organization. Given the seasonality of our business, like summer holidays and Christmas season, and assuming no major change in the economic environment, net revenue for the second half 2015 should exceed first half year net revenue. Funding costs are expected to benefit from the repayment of loans signed at the time of the IPO and the low interest rate environment. At the same time, due to the scheduled completion of the business transition, IT-related operating expenses will increase compared to the first half of the year. Based on these factors, we increase our full year 2015 guidance and are expecting reported earnings per share between 470 and 419 Swiss francs from between 460 and 480 before. Furthermore, the dividend proposal is going to be in line with our medium target. So with that, I would like to conclude my remarks and thank you for all your attention. And Selena, we can open it now for questions.
The first question comes from Mr. Jean-Thomas Schipp from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you very much for your presentation. I have a couple of questions. First one on your guidance increase. When I compare your statements of the full year results versus now, it feels to me that not too much has changed. May I ask, what were your primary worries back in the beginning of this year? Second question, you reduce the GE funding. What can we expect for the remainder of 2015? Third question, you said that you want to improve deposit funding pricing. What and when can we expect something here? Fourth question would be the auto loan yields. It has slightly decreased, and you said that competition has increased. What do you see happening here going forward? And sorry for the last question. In terms of regulation, the excessive marketing, as far as I understand correctly, is now forbidden. How do you tackle this, and how does it impact your business? Thank you very much.
Well, I think there are a lot of questions for Antoine, but I'll take the last one. Antoine, you take the first four, and I'll take the regulation one.
Okay, so on guidance, I think obviously when we provide guidance, which is unusual in the market, we feel pretty comfortable about the guidance we're providing. I think at the beginning of the year, I mean, you remember the circumstances, you know, on the 15th of January, there was a pretty big shock in the market in Switzerland. So we were very confident to give a guidance, you know, back then because, again, the nature of our business. Obviously, our confidence grew in the first half, as you've seen some of our, you know, metrics. And that's why we've upgraded the guidance to be in line with this. But, you know, I mean, call it conservatism from our side, you know, but, you know, it's actually how we've looked at it probably. On the next question on the GE funding, so we started to reduce, you know, the GE funding early. I mean, as you know, this is probably our most expensive source of funding since the IPO. We always said that we wanted to first repay fully the IPO syndicated loan, which we've done. And then, you know, considering the cash level that we have and the inflow we're seeing on the deposit side, I know we started to prepay the GE funding. I mean, one thing to consider is we'll continue to, you know, prepay this. I mean, the rhythm by which we will do that, I don't think we can, you know, basically be specific at this stage on doing, but maybe I can help you with the framework of how we're thinking about it. We're thinking about it in the context of that funding has a certain maturity, you know, which is 2018. You know, and we probably want to replace that funding with instrument or debt instruments or funding sources which have a similar type of maturity or longer. So we'll do that at a pace which doesn't materially, you know, impact our funding maturity profile. On the deposits, I think we're very pleased by the retail growth. Again, I think if you look at the way we think about deposits, you know, from a pricing perspective, you have to look at it together, institutional and retail. As you can see, the weighted average rate of the combined deposits is coming down compared to, you know, the previous year. Even though from a mixed standpoint, retail is a bit more expensive, as we reprice our book on the institutional side, we're pricing it at a very, very competitive rate. So the pace, again, I think, you know, it's depending on the maturity profile we have on the term deposits on the institutional side, but we're positive that, you know, we can probably continue to lower the weighted average rate there. And, you know, we'll see at the end of the year where we stand there.
I think sorry for interrupting. Could you please specify where you are now at pricing the institutional deposits?
We do price every transaction we price, you know, discretely on a separate basis. So I can't really comment on specific deals that we're doing with specific counterparty, obviously. Mm-hmm. But again, if you look at the swap curve, I mean, the swap curve is negative, for very up to very long maturities on the short and even the midterm. So we price off you know, that swap curve was that we apply a spread to it. And that, you know, basically is very competitive for us. We price ourselves on a fixed rate basis, and then we try to do that for long duration. So,
Thank you.
On the auto, just the last one on the auto loan and lease, I think the, you know, our yield has come down, as you see, but again, a part of that is function of the portfolio turn, as we mentioned before. I think we mentioned before that, you know, we don't expect this to go below 5%, but over time, as every vintage is coming off our books from, you know, the last 3 years and is being replaced by current year vintage, you have this portfolio effect. I think on new vintage, I think what we're trying to do is be very disciplined on the price there. And that's reflected also a little bit into our receivable base, as you've seen that, you know, was roughly flat for the first half when the market was up. But, you know, our strategy hasn't changed there, is being very disciplined on price there.
Maybe a few words on the self-regulation and on advertising. So there's been a lot of discussions on aggressive advertising in the last couple of years. We've been actively supporting self-regulation, which was, probably going to be implemented the 1st of January. I think that's going to help us because if you look at our advertising, we're not aggressive. We have not been aggressive at all. And now since we are Chimbra, we're not planning to be aggressive. Some of our competitors, but also some of the agents sometimes on the internet are more aggressive advertising than we are. So I think if there's going to be a control on advertising, I think it will even reinforce us because, you know, we'll probably be better positioned on the internet as well. So I think it will help us on the long term. And I tell also it fits into the strategy of being a very stable, consistent player in the market without being too aggressive in consumer finance.
All right, many thanks.
The next question is from Martin Emes from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for the presentation. Two brief questions, please. Firstly, on strategy and plans in the credit card business, you flagged earlier that once the IT decoupling and the IT transition is done, you would be available and eager to add more partners to your credit card platform. Now that you flagged that the transition will be done by the end of this year, could you maybe update us on the progress made on the credit card funds, and also whether you could comment on timing and expected volumes once you sign new partners? That would be very helpful. And secondly, maybe on competitive dynamics in the personal loan market. Recently, I think there was a new entrant into the market advertising personal loans from retail outlets, kiosk. If you could comment whether this is a longer-term threat to your business and whether this could change dynamics in the market. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. The both questions for me, so I will try to answer them. First of all, look, we're always available and eager to get new credit card partners. I think we were limited for about 2 years in the whole IT transition. That doesn't mean that we don't talk to people. I cannot give you any specifics of when we're going to sign because we don't know. But we're talking to everybody in the market. We are ready and happy, you know, to sign new deals. You also know that there's no second mingle in the market. I think everybody realizes that. If you sign a deal, you probably need at least 6 months to implement it in your IT system as well. So I know there's always a timing effect in there as well. I can only say that we are eager. We're trying to convince people to go to the market. I mean, I think the regulation might help in a way, but it might take a bit more time. So I think people will wait on having an answer on the max interest rate because that could impact also some of the private label players in the market. People will probably also wait to see the impact on the interchange. So, look, I can only say we're talking to partners, potential partners, and we hope to sign on, you know, as soon as possible. And as soon as we have something, we'll let you know, but I can't give you really more detail in here. On the new entrant, it's difficult to comment because, you know, they're live now, but I haven't seen their business plan or business. Personally, I can give you some comments. I struggle to sell consumer credit to kiosks. I think, you know, the strength that we have on consumer finance is that we have a very strong advisory function in our branches, and we consult our customers really deeply, and we go into detail. I struggle to see that in kiosk because, you know, that's where you sell magazines and there are people queuing up for a counter. So I don't know how they're going to do it, but look, it's their business. I think it's good that you have sometimes new entrants in the market. It gives you more competitive edge. Let's see how they're going to perform. I struggle a bit with the concept also on advertising. Now I struggle when you don't want to do aggressive advertising. In my view, that's a personal view, you shouldn't do it in kiosks because there's a lot of young people coming there as well. So I struggle a bit, but that's my personal view.
Thank you very much.
We have a follow-up question from Mr. Jean-Thomas Schrips. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have one more question. Thank you. So if Migros, as your partner, partners up with Twint and goes over to mobile payment, the way I see this may impact very strongly your credit card business. What is your take on that?
Yeah, I'll take that as well. Look, there has been a lot of discussion about mobile payment, you know. Tapit, the platform from Swisscom, is now going to be decommissioned officially. I think they spent some money on this one. There are a lot of players trying to boost mobile payment. We are good followers, so we don't want to be leaders. I think mobile payment is going to change the way if we pay as soon as retailers are going to change their terminals in the store, not before. And there need to be a winning technology. And as far as I'm concerned today, there's not a winning technology. A lot of people in there, a lot of telcos in there, a lot of banks in there, there's Apple in there, and there's not a winning technology yet. I think it will take some time. When there's a winning technology, I don't think it's going to impact us a lot because we have the credit card, we have the account. So if you pay through a card or through your watch or through your mobile phone or through your Ring, I don't know what is possible in the future. I don't think it's going to change a lot because we have the account and we have also the Oculus program behind it. So I don't see the impact on this, honestly.
All right. Many thanks.
The next question comes from Mr. Thomas Korselak from MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I have two brief questions. The first question relating to personal loans and the competition here. I've been seeing introduction of some discount on pricing by competitors like BankNow. Could we imagine also pricing on your side coming down or introduction of any sort of temporary discounts, bonuses, whatever they're called? And the second question regarding the NPL, NPL ratio increased a bit since the year end, and the NPL coverage actually went down. Can we assume this trend to continue, and do you feel comfortable with keeping the loss rate at exactly 1%, let's say 100 basis points? Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. I'll do the question on pricing and personal loans, and Holger could comment on the NPL side. Look, you know, pricing on personal loans, there's nothing new in here. We have been the market leader since 20 years, and, you know, since 20 years we've been attacked on price because that's probably the place where people try to attack us because I don't think they can beat us on service and distribution. So, yes, it's true that, you know, some of the competitors having an aggressive price. Like Migros Bank came in 2009 in the market with an extremely aggressive price. Like Cashgate has, you know, aggressive pricing sometimes. Like BankNow sometimes is more aggressive than we are on pricing. We have never done a price campaign in the last years. I mean, we don't plan to do huge price campaigns because we think that our value proposition is service and is easy process and is, you know, strong process, easy process, and service delivery. So we don't plan any price campaigns. Never say never in life, but there's nothing planned for us so far. And we don't think that we want to play on price. The yield for us is very important. Volker, you want to say something about the NPL?
Yeah, the NPL at the end of the first half of 2015 is 0.5%, which is exactly the same value that we had in the same period last year. I think when you mentioned that we have increased the NPL ratio slightly, you compare it probably to the end of last year, and there is a seasonal impact. So always at the end of last year, when people get extra salaries, extra payments, they use a portion of that for repaying due or overdue debt, which is just kind of a seasonal increase that we see. I think the second part of your question was then around the NPL coverage, which is just a consequence of the NPL ratio, because you get then a denominator effect in that. Otherwise, it would have been constant. So again, it's just the seasonal swing that we see. And then the third part of your question was about the loss rate. And yes, we have gave a guidance on the loss rate of 1%, and we maintain the guidance for the year.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a last-second registration, and which is from Mr. Carlos Soriano from Gross Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the presentation. You mentioned you have 27 million Swiss francs of excess capital. This will obviously increase by the end of this year. Could you please provide us with an update of potential uses of this excess capital? And also, could you comment on whether you continue to see the 18% ratio of capital as an appropriate minimum for the company?
The question is a bit in between Antoine and myself, so I'll give it to Antoine.
So I think on the excess capital, so you've seen 27 million rebuild, right after the share buyback. I mean, some of that obviously is driven by the nominal tax benefit that we had in connection with that transaction for about close to 16 million. I think the optionality on excess capital hasn't necessarily changed from what we've discussed the previous year. I think the previous year it was, three different options. One was more dividend. The other was, share buyback. And the last one was bolt-on acquisition. I mean, the share buyback, this is the option we chose, in May, because it was, probably a good window to do this and to use it effectively. I think we'll have to look at, in the balance in the year and going forward, what do we do? I think, but we don't want necessarily to move or diverge substantially from the 18% that we've set for ourselves. So I think the short answer is, let's talk again at year end, and we'll see. But those options are the same that we've had in the previous year. We found one use of it last, for this year. We'll have to figure out how we deal with it, going forward. I think on the 18%, again, I think this is a target we put up there, back in at the time of IPO. I think there's for us it shows again a very strong balance sheet. We have a good funding profile that we're making better. I think in terms of stability of our source of funding in the context of growing our retail deposit. So I think we'll have to look at this in the context of, what is the end game on the funding side for us. At the same time, as there's a lot of discussion in terms of, Tier 1 and risk weight coming from Basel. And so there's a lot of regulatory potential change that will take place this year. I think, our view is probably to wait a little bit and see what's going to come out of this, because it's still a moving target in terms of where regulation is going to go. But in that regard, again, with our Tier 1, we're very comfortable, we'll continue to see how the regulation evolves in that.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question.
Okay, with that, we would like to thank everyone for the participation, and we hope to see some of you in the coming days of our roadshow. Thank you for participating.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for choosing Chorus Call, and thank you for participating in the conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Goodbye.